Live from the In the Room studios located in the Net Carrier and Cloud, this is the VOC Nation Radio Network.
And so it began. The first Nitro ever from Mall of America in 1995, which went on to change wrestling the way we know it today, thus beginning the Monday Night Wars. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to WCW Retro. I am the host, the above-average comedian, Dan the Man Pellicico. With me as always, Stro, the maestro of wrestling, WCW star and indie star. How you doing tonight, Stro?
Doing great. Great to be here.
Now, there is a little rumor, and I will have to ask you the first question because, obviously, I was a bit younger. I don't remember much about, you know, you go back and you find out. But I don't remember much of the buzz around, except for watching WCW TV, that a new television show was coming out. Little did I know at my age how big of a deal this was, that they were going up against Raw, that they were going to be live, and that it would change the face of wrestling, as I stated before. You were obviously active at the time. What was the buzz around the business that this show was coming on?
Turner decided to put his foot down and go all out 110%. Into competing with Vince McMahon and WWE in all aspects, and thus including competing with him on the Monday nights with WWE Raw. So he got together Eric Bischoff and the WCW faculty and staff and wrestlers and put together what we all know now as WCW Monday Nitro, which was the opposition to WWE Monday Night Raw, and which not only was it competition, but you had it's like some of the best wrestlers from like all over the world, Japan, Mexico, Europe, all over. I mean creme la creme, the best of the best, and it caused such a hot wave of exposure at the time that a lot of guys that were leaving the WWE were taking notice and taking a look at the success that WCW Monday Night was given. And then, take the first episode, for example, the big crossover of Lex Luger from WWF back to WCW at the time. And that in itself, I mean, that was big enough. And then you had matches like Ric Flair against Sting. Hulk Hogan defended the championship against Big Bubba Rogers, Pillman and Jushin Thunder Liger from Japan. I mean, it was a pretty hot episode.
I haven't seen that Ric Flair Sting match very often, and you know, I haven't really seen the Hulk Hogan Bubba Rogers match, but I think I've seen Brian Pillman versus Jushin Thunder Liger. So that particular match. So many times, and it's such a good match. I mean, what a way to open up this television show. I mean, they started at an hour, September 4th, 95. They originally started with 1 hour. I don't think it was maybe – I think it maybe went a year before they went to two and then one more year before they went to 3 hours. Comment on the 3 hours a little bit later because it has to do with wrestling today. But, I mean, was there any – kind of snickering or worry the fact that it was at the Mall of America, or do you think that tarnished it at the start, or did it matter?
Well, at the time, WCW wanted to make the biggest bang possible with this new Nitro show Monday nights, and with the Mall of America being the most popular mall in the United States. And they were hoping to make a really big impact, with a lot of people already being there. And on top of, you know, improving the exposure to the audience live and on television, seeing it live. So, I mean, they just wanted to make the biggest bang they could. And it worked.
Yeah, I would say that. Sorry about that, Stro. I'll tell you what. I mean, you mentioned the Lex Luger thing. Let's talk about a little bit about that first episode. Again, in the Mall of America, but you had every tier of that mall, right at the center of that mall, filled with wrestling fans. Or maybe not so much wrestling fans, but you had people there that, you know, they filled that up and made it look presentable and made it look, excuse me, made it look good. And then you threw in the 9, 10 of the biggest stars you had at WCW at the time, and you threw them on TV and you packaged it. And you mentioned the Lex Luger thing. I think Bischoff, obviously, through the history, Bischoff right away established that that man was not going to pull any punches, that he was on the mission to compete, if not outdo and put away the WWF by literally, I believe, through the stories, a verbal agreement with Lex Luger to come over and jump ship like that after he already had a verbal working agreement with the McMahon.
Yeah, I mean, Nitro was you know, raising a lot of eyebrows at the time, and the Lex Luger switchover from WWE back to WCW was only the beginning, as you know, we found out later on.
I will say this, you know, watching that, we could talk about Bobby Heenan and how great he was. We've done it many times, but I think the only person that could make Steve Mongo McMichael sound good on the commentary, and that's not saying much, is Bobby Heenan. Bobby could tolerate that guy, and I have no disrespect or any bad words to say about Mongo. I don't care what anybody says. He was entertaining as hell when he was in that ring. Made up for it with size in his mouth, but not good at commentary. I will fight to the end on that one. Probably shouldn't have been there. And yet with Bobby Heenan, just the two of them with Bischoff on commentary just added something to it. I mean, you talk about Raw later on, and they had the great JR and Jerry Lawler, which is the best 1-2 in announcing of the 90s. You know, you put it up there with Heenan and Gorilla. But Bobby Heenan, I talked to a lot of people, and I think looking back, I agree that maybe he was underutilized big time in WCW. But I think that was a good fit to work. The only person that Mongo could work off of was Bobby Heenan, because Bobby could carry that broadcast.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Bobby Heenan was gold, hands down. I mean, just the classic ribs he would pull on Tony Schiavone and Mongo alone were great, and occasionally every now and then you get him and Dusty Rhodes together on commentary, which was epic. And you know, of course, you had Larry Zbyszko from time to time doing his commentary as well. So I mean, the commentary position, you know, you had those guys along with him, Eric Bischoff at the time, right before, you know, he joined with the NWO and all that. I mean, the commentary was great, and like you said, Bobby Heenan could have done a lot more if utilized correctly.
Yeah, I just think Bobby Heenan, unfortunately, was one of those guys, you know what, let's grab him, he's a big name, and then they got him and didn't really know what to do. I mean, he was there every week, and sometimes he was the highlight of the show, was Bobby, because the one-liners, every match there was another one-liner. But I don't think he cared. I mean, I'm sure he hated it, but at that point it was a paycheck. I don't care. But you mentioned Zbyszko. If I had to listen one more time to the human game of chess, I was going to throw something one more time.
I'll never forget when they had the WCW Saturday night thing. And I think this is right before Bobby Heenan went to start the WCW Nitro commentary bit. And there were Dusty Rhodes was coming in doing the Saturday night thing, right? And Bobby Heenan did the promo with Dusty where he's like, you know, that's it. If I have to do a commentary with you, I quit. And then Bobby Heenan's on Nitro. So him and Dusty together were hilarious.
I mean, we'll talk a little bit. Oh, man. Well, you know, they knew each other for so many years at that point. They could do it with their eyes closed, you know?
Oh, absolutely. And the funny thing is, you know, Heenan and Hogan always got along, but, like, on commentary, Heenan would, like, rib Hogan to death. It was hysterical. Like, I think Tony Schiavone, for example, was talking about how, look, they're holding four fingers. That means to sign the four horsemen, right? I think that was Eric Bischoff that said that, right? And Bob Heenan fired back and said, with Hulk Hogan, I only hold one finger.
There is a moment later on in little mid-99, and this is the stuff that comes to my mind that I've watched it so many times. I don't know if I mentioned it on the show once. I have them on DVD now up to the beginning of 2000, but from the very first Nitro on to the very last Nitro and every Thunder and every Saturday night and every pay-per-view from Slamboree 98 on, I had on VHS. I recorded everything. And I think I had at one point 5-6 boxes, but very large boxes, long and deep boxes of these VHS that I would take a piece of paper, cut it, tape it to the outside of the tape box and label everything, the matches that were on it. If I didn't like a segment, I just pressed pause and didn't record that. I had them all. So at one point, I think I'd seen everything like 15, 16 times. So it's just random stuff that pops in my head.
There's one time. I forgot to mention, I'm sorry. One time I remember, you know, I used to do deal with the symphony, and every match we'd celebrate, you know, we lift up in the air and like celebrate victories and stuff. There's one time that Bobby Heenan was doing commentary for one of my matches, and thank God I did not hear what he said at the end of the match. So I saw the replay later, and, you know, we were celebrating, and Bobby Heenan's in the commentary going, "Backdropper, maestro, over the top rope." If I would have heard that, I would have totally lost it.
Oh, man. There's a moment later on, mid-99, which is the point, the reason why I told the videotape story is because, like I said, I can remember this clearly. It was right before Hogan went back to the red and yellow in 99. He was coming out to Voodoo Child still, but he was Hollywood Hulk Hogan, but he was a baby face. He started hulking up at the beginning of that year again. It was the steel cage barbed wire match against Ric Flair at Uncensored 99. All of a sudden, he started hulking up out of nowhere. But you mentioned the Bobby Heenan slamming Hogan, and he's been slamming him for years, still did, even when he was a baby face. And he came out to do commentary for the Nitro main event with Bischoff and Heenan. And he's coming down the ring, and Bischoff's like, "You said a lot of mean things about him, Bobby." He goes, "Is he coming here? I'm out of here." And he gets up, walks out, and they meet each other at the other end of the table. And Hogan sticks out his hand for a handshake, and Bobby kind of just looks at him and walks away. That was it. I was perfect to put that story. To keep that story like that on the show was beautiful. One of the other things that sticks out of my mind about Heenan and Hogan was when, and I know this is not Nitro related, but when he did that turn at Bash at the Beach, one of the things that Heenan said, "Now see what I've been telling you after all these years." And it's beautiful. The hate he had for Hogan was great. And speaking of Hogan, to get your comment on this, I mean, not only the signing that we mentioned last week, or 2 weeks ago, but the fact that Nitro, for the first almost full year, they built around Hogan. That was the man. Put him out there, and that's who we got, Flying Nitro.
Right. Yeah, I mean, and you had, like, the first hours, you know, where, you know, when we eventually got in, like, the top cruiserweights from, like, all over the world, you know, competing, right? And which, you know, we got to see, got to be a treat to, rather, some, like, phenomenal matches. And then, like, the last the last hour or so was, you know, Hulk Hogan, Ric Flair, you know, and all the Roddy Piper and, you know, all the like top legends of the company at the time doing their thing. So, I mean, what a great combo.
There was a point where I think you could tell on Nitro where the Hogan thing started to turn sour for the fans, where he'd come out, especially in the South, you know, where it's Flair and NWA country, and this was the evil bastard for years that was the WWF World Heavyweight Champion, where they would just, it was like a John Cena entrance, where you get 50-50. You get the, half the crowd cheering and half of the crowd booing him out of the building, and that, by the end of the night, the boos would overshoot the cheers. I don't think the we touched upon this, the Dungeon of Doom gimmick helped them like any of them any better, but you had to make a change, and we'll talk about that specific Nitro in the weeks later. Go ahead, please.
No, keep going.
I was going to say, and you mentioned this to shoot off of what you said also, another thing that Nitro was doing was the Cruiserweights. And this is before, personally, myself got into ECW. I discovered that company late 97, early 98. So the guys they were pulling in for the Cruiserweight matches, Eddie Guerrero, Jericho, La Parca, Psychosis, Juventud Guerrera, the list goes on and on. Rey Mysterio, that was something nobody else was doing, and that would hook you in almost immediately when you turned on the show.
Oh, you had those great high flyers from all over the world, the Lucha Libre style from Mexico, greats from Japan, Ultimo Dragon, you know, you guys, the Kaz Ayashi, you know, and then now there'll be the great Muta coming in, Masahiro Chono, and then you had great mat technicians, you know, like Dean Malenko and the guys from Europe, you know, William Regal, Dave Taylor, you know, Fit Finley. I mean, some the best of the best. You know, it was awesome.
I think one of my favorite matches, this was real early on, I believe, when Steven Regal and the Belfast Brawler, quote-unquote Fit Finley, had that parking lot match, excuse me. I don't remember ever seeing that before then.
Oh, yeah. I mean, and it's funny because these guys are both great mat wrestlers in their own right, but they were, you know, in parking lot brawl matches and all kinds of crazy stuff. And they would wrestle solid. And then, I mean, there are many times I've seen both lacerated and bruised up quite a bit. But, you know, that's the way they wrestle, and, you know, that's just their way, and it was great to watch.
I will say this about William Regal, Steve Regal at the time, obviously, for those who didn't know. I, as a, you know, younger man, I did not appreciate him. I hated him. He was a bad guy and booed him every time I saw him. But later on, when you go back and watch this stuff, and then later on in his career watching, you know, WWE Raw, that's one of my favorite wrestlers that has ever been on the television. He was great. Bad guy or good guy. On the mic, he was fantastic. And I almost think there were so many Nitros where he was pulling the first hour and working matches real early in the show. And I don't think, apparently, Bischoff didn't give that man enough credit. I mean, you see what happened when he left and came back.
Oh, yeah. I mean, Regal, I mean, he made wrestling an art form. You know what I mean? I mean, those European guys, you know, they were great, great mat technicians. But, you know, back then when they were coming up in the business, you know, the rings weren't as big as ones in the United States, rather. So they had to learn how to fine-tune the art of mat wrestling, and they're just incredible to watch.
I remember a match, and it's in Regal's book, too. It was in 98, I believe it was in 98, where Goldberg, Regal and Goldberg had to have a match. Now, I've heard, obviously, different stories and different opinions of Goldberg. Say what you want. Going past that. Goldberg had to – this was going to be the first match on Nitro where Regal was going – Regal and Goldberg were going to go for a couple minutes and not just have a Goldberg squash. And Regal was going to obviously job to him, but – If you go back and look at the match, it's actually, you know, it's pretty hard to watch. But the problem became Regal would give Goldberg the offense, and Goldberg couldn't do any offense. So Regal was trying to carry that match, and he made Goldberg that. You look back at the Goldberg situation. Everybody,
I was
Goldberg,
there. I was there that night. My little brother called it, actually, you know, watching the back, you know. Booker T, you know, Sting, and, you know, a few of the boys were watching the back monitor. And, you know, we saw Regal come out for his match with Goldberg. And, you know, we're all looking at each other like, oh, man, not Regal. Because, you know, we all know how legit Regal is. You know, I mean, he's one of the toughest guys in the locker room and ever, for that matter. I mean, incredible wrestler. And my brother called it. Brother Scott called. He's like, nah, man, Regal ain't going down like no punk. You watch. Sure enough, Regal schooled Goldberg for like almost 10 minutes. And then when Goldberg went to look at the camera, I swear he looked like Perry Saturn at the time, because, I mean, Regal just did a number, you know what I mean? And just, but it actually, Regal made it a competitive match, you know, like you said.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. You saw Regal was working so hard in that, and I know, you know, obviously reading his book, that match took place when Regal was really heavy on the substance abuse and the taking the drug. You get past that, and he was carrying that man through that match. And I think Goldberg later on came out and said that Regal did it himself to make it look bad. But then you fast forward to, like, the finger poke of doom and the situation at Starrcade. The situation that started with, you know, Nash going over on Goldberg, and Goldberg just throws the blame on everybody else. Buddy, it's a TV show. You know,
right.
I mean, that was it. You had an amazing run, but I think once you win so many matches and you don't lose, you know, what the hell else can you do with it? I loved Goldberg watching it as a young kid.
Right.
But when you watch it stuff later on, it's like, I don't know, that was such a good idea. I mean,
you know, I do have to agree with Kevin Sullivan on the fact that the way they ended the streak wasn't the right way to end it. You know, with the whole taser gun thing, and it was just, you know, I mean, because, I mean, at the time, the undefeated streak of Goldberg, it was money. I mean, it was getting such a great following. I mean, Goldberg, I mean, he's legit. He's tough. He's big. I mean, intimidating. I mean, he was like, you know, he was the guy at the time.
I don't necessarily disagree with you on that, but that's for another story. That's for when we talk about the supercard that is Starrcade, which we will definitely talk about at one point, because that was before WrestleMania and it set a precedent in wrestling, in my opinion. But, yeah, I have the match playing right now, and it's oh, man.
Regal and Goldberg, right?
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about. Yeah,
watching?
About that. Uh-huh.
Yeah, Regal's the man. I mean, he's people. I mean, he don't get his just due. Regal is like, if this business was just a total shoot, guys like him, Haku, you know, Ming, right? Barbarian, uh-huh. those guys would be world champions like 10 times over. I mean, those some of the tough, Fit Finley, you know what I mean? They're like some of the toughest guys in our business.
I don't care how old he is. I would still not walk up to Regal in a dark alley and call him a nasty name. Whether I was an athlete or not, I wouldn't say, you know, your mother's ugly. You know, I'd be across the street in heavy traffic. But I would not.
Regal would be the type of guy that'd break up a Steiner brother fight, and that says a lot, considering the Steiners in their own right. You know what I mean?
Oh man, I'm just watching this. Okay, anyway, moving on. Staying on the Goldberg thing, before we get into one more negative aspect, which is a Jericho story. Again, another man that once they started the machine that they were building Nitro around this guy, and that is Bill Goldberg. Undeniably, at the time, in the, you know, in 97, 98, into early 99, that reaction was some of the biggest reactions in wrestling. Compare it to anybody. And Austin, I believe, will go down as the greatest superstar there ever was. And I would pick him over The Rock. I know how great Rock is. I would even pick him over Sting, my favorite wrestler. Austin was probably the biggest star. But at the time, you couldn't get away from Goldberg because he was an easy look. Big, bad, and mean. And they would build Nitro around this guy.
Oh, absolutely. And I tell you, you know, the reaction he got from the Georgia Dome when he won the title from Hogan and actually wrestling Scott Hall, you know, right before the same night was incredible. I mean, the only drawback I had was I'm thinking to myself, I wish to God this was on pay-per-view. You know, they're giving away a pay-per-view type show right there on Nitro. You know what I mean? It was crazy. And, I mean, I'm being there that night in the Georgia Dome, I mean, it was just deafening when Goldberg won the title. I mean, what a pop.
Well, since you brought it up, let's talk about that for a second. July 6, 1998. It's at Atlanta. It's at the Georgia Dome. You just mentioned that. July 6, 1998. July 8, 1998. So, you know what? I got that wrong three times. I'm going to get the date right here. It is July 6, 1998. Okay, thank you. I'm trying to remember and do research at the same time, Stro. Forgive me. So another show we'll talk about briefly a little bit later on in this episode because we're almost already at halftime. On Thunder, the week before, J.J. Dillon comes out and mentions that Goldberg's going to fight Hulk Hogan for the WCW title. A week before. No build-up, no nothing. Now, you could look at it. There's two thoughts on this. First of all, you look at it and go, well, holy crap, look at all they did, and look how much bigger that crowd got with less than a week of time to announce it, and how much more tickets they sold or gave away, whatever Bischoff was doing. And it turned out to be a great moment in WCW history. The reaction was one of the loudest in wrestling. On the other hand, they only gave a week of promotion. They put it on Nitro, they put it on free TV, and it was just for a ratings grab instead of a money grab. You put that on, what was the July pay-per-view? Was it, well, see, it was Road Wild, or was that in August now? No, July was Bash at the Beach. Put that on at Bash at the Beach, you have buyout ratings records. I really believe that.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, it would have been huge.
Now, touch upon a little bit more, that finger poke of doom. I know we're skipping ahead, but there's so much to talk about. The finger poke of doom, I remember that being a great show. I have very clear memories, very vivid memories of that episode. And I think it was the first of the year. It was it had to be January 3rd or 4th or something like that, 1999. And I know, obviously, and this brings up, I'll bring up two questions. One is, how do you feel about Bischoff revealing the dirty tactics and revealing results on the other show?
Oh, my goodness. You know, Eric was, you know, doing everything he could to kind of compete with, right? And it totally backfired on him because, I mean, everybody was, like, wanting to find out if it was so by turning this channel, right? You know?
Yeah.
So, but, I mean, you know, the thing is, WCW at the time was so hot at the time. If, you know, my only thing is if they would have just stuck to what we did best, you know what I mean, and just provide great television and great pay-per-views, you know, I mean, we probably would still be here today, you know what I mean?
There's another one I remember specifically with Bischoff giving out results was when Vince McMahon was revealed to be the higher power. And the quote was something to the effect of, I know you're wondering, everybody on Raw, what the higher power is, but I believe the initials is somebody VM or something.
Mm-hmm.
And I know, I turned it on to watch it. Oh, okay, I want to see that. It's me, Austin!
ECW had too much great things going on. You know, I mean, we really didn't need that. You know, I mean, we had a lot of exciting things at the time happening.
Speaking of the finger poke, again, back on the episode track, that was one of my favorite shows. They were doing a good show up to that point, and then they just. I had mixed feelings that night. Again, as a younger man. I personally was like, yes, the NWO's back together. At the same time, I was like, well, I really wanted to see Kevin Nash kill that guy. I really wanted to see Kevin Nash beat up Hogan, Mr. Running for President, which was all just ratings grab as well. I do remember when it happened at first, I can see the room and everything. That it was like this significant moment in my life, but it really wasn't kind of thing. But I can still see the room. And everything, when he poked him and he fell, I really was confused. I was like, what is happening here? And it was just, Nitro never really, there are several other underlying factors we've talked about before, but I think they never recovered. I don't think they could ever recover. I think Raw, I don't think they ever won a ratings battle ever again.
Well, you know, as many great things as Nitro put off on TV, you know, they also did some things that maybe shouldn't have been on TV. You know what I mean? But you know, it was like trial by error type deal at the time, you know. And you know, and another thing, you know, we got to mention some of the great feuds that came from Nitro, like the Randy Savage Diamond Dallas Page feud, which I pretty much enjoyed.
Oh, that was some of my favorite matches. Some of my favorite promos and digs, when he busted out the pictures of Kimberly from Playboy, it was like, whoa! Whoa, he went there.
Right.
And some of my favorite blow-off matches were the, you know, Randy Savage and DDP 1 and 2. And the second one was, one was Spring Stampede and one was Great American Bash, I think. This is all off of memory and I don't feel like looking it up. So don't quote me on that, folks. There's another feud I wanted to mention in a second. I want to go to a break, but I want to mention this real quick. The last ratings win for Nitro was October 26, 1998. And they did a 5-1 and Raw did a 4-5. And after that, it was close for a little while. It was pretty close into 99, and then the further you go into 99, it's just, ooh. They climbed back up once in August and September, which I'm sure is all because of you. And then they kind of just, it never happened again. I want to talk about, when we come back first, I want to talk about one more Goldberg feud that could have been something that started off really awesome and then it really wasn't. And I think you'll come in the direction with me on this one. We'll be right back with the WCW Nitro on WCW Retro.
This is CeeLo Brown, and right here, right now, you better recognize that I am down with the VOC Nation. Recognize that.
Hey guys, Grady Hicks here, Pro Wrestling Illustrated contributing writer and the host of In the Room, TheBradyHicks.com, and for the first time ever, VOCNation.com. So happy to be part of the family. Join us each and every Tuesday night, 9, 8 Central, VOCNation.com, TheBradyHicks.com, myself, DJ, Derek McDonald, Ray Bogus, Anthony Sarlo, Kathy Fitz, breaking down all that's going on in wrestling today, and so much more.
Okay, Philadelphia parents, listen up. Do you have a child in the house that's just about to learn how to drive? Well, you got to do this. You got to head over to DuncanSchoolOfDriving.com. Best of Bucks County 2013. Keep that insurance down. Keep them accident free. 215-639-1990. They're endorsed by the Pennsylvania Police Officers Association, DuncanSchoolOfDriving.com.
Business owners, prepare to take charge. Get the latest trends in business and technology every Tuesday at 12 p.m. Eastern, presented by NetCarrier. Tweet your business questions in advance at NetCarrier using the hashtag TakeChargeTuesday or call live toll-free at 1-855-VOC-RADIO.
Hey, I'm the Mouth of the South, Jimmy Hart, telling you fans worldwide to visit VOCNation.com. VOC Nation gives you top-notch interviews, insightful blogs, and, of course, the VOC Wrestling Nation radio program. The VOC Wrestling Nation radio program is live every Wednesday with the hottest guests, the latest news, and lots of fun from the greatest team in wrestling media headed by the voice of choice. Hey, take it from me, the Mouth of the South, Jimmy Hart. VOCNation.com is the place to go, baby.
Hola, hola, hola. I am Shelly Funtime Martinez.
And I am Dazzling Danielle.
And together we are
the Martinez Girls.
Tune in on VOC Nation at 7 p.m. Eastern
every Saturday. And until then, Danielle, I and you are Audi 5000. Adios, toodles.
The godless voice of Crab Nation. None of these assholes would have the balls to say any of this to anyone live.
I get hard as one of them stones. I'm going to hurl at a homosexual.
He's got 6 ounces of weed, and he's saving his roaches?
Bangable and diabetic.
Pass the car keys
to Stevie Wonder.
Free speech zone should just be the air, motherfucker.
Catch the crabs on Crab Nation Live weekdays.
Noon to 2 p.m. Pacific, 3 to 5 p.m. Eastern on the VOC Nation.
Entertainment with an attitude.
Fear is just one enemy.
This is the VOC Nation Radio Network.
It's WCW World Championship Wrestling. When you look at this capacity crowd on hand, we are in the city that never sleeps, the entertainment capital of the world, a fitting place for a remarkable night of WCW World Championship Wrestling.
Welcome back, everybody, to the Nitro Edition, which is going to end up being part one of two or three, because there's so much stuff we can talk about for their TV shows, especially Nitro, but this is Nitro Part 1. I am the Above Average Comedian, Hank Altigo. With me, as always, is Maestro of Wrestling, Stro, and joining us for the second hour is Derek McDonald. Derek, you there?
Yes, I'm here. Thank you for that great introduction.
That's what I do. It's, of course, Stroh's here. Before I forget, gentlemen, because I really want to talk about this guy, because one of my favorites on Nitro, and, you know, you go back and listen to the stories about how, you know, he was very underutilized, and you could tell watching it, but they gave him time every week, and he ran with it, was Chris Jericho. Chris Jericho... Mm-hmm. Your opening thoughts, Derek, first you, then Stro. Your opening thoughts on Chris Jericho, the Lionheart Chris Jericho.
I for some strange reason, when he was, you know, the bland guy wrestling on WCW Worldwide, I took a liking to him. I never knew why, because he was pretty much boring back then. But he always put on great matches with Hoot and Toot, and he was kind of like the white bread babyface guy. You know, he didn't have much to his character, and then all of a sudden he beats up David Penzer, and he's ripping his tux off, and he turns heel, and he's in the middle of the ring with the 1,004 moves, and he's saying armbar. Like, he was definitely a underutilized guy in that company, and he was awesome.
It's true.
Oh, yeah, no doubt. Chris Jericho, I mean, just loads of talent, and, I mean, like, you know, like Derek stated, when he first came in, you know, he was you know, your baby face, you know, your fan favorite at the time. And you know, and then people were like, you know, okay, you know, this is Chris Jericho and then Lionheart, right? And then when he made the move, when he made the turn, and he started really coming out, you know, with his character and his charisma. And he stood out because he was so different from all the other talents there at the time. I mean, he would do some of the silly stuff every now and then, right? As a matter of fact, we even made a bet on Nitro to see who got the goofiest on TV. Like, and he do his cheap trick, I want you to want me, jump up and down with his silly hairdos, right? And I would do my silly hairdo deal with the maestro with the wand waving the time. And the there he was, the more entertaining we make our personas, that, you know, we would get noticed. And so Jericho, I mean, didn't, you know, that was the stage for him, which, you know, WCW really should have capitalized that, in my opinion, because later on, as we saw, WWE definitely did. And so, you know, he was a star in the making.
So it's your fault that he would come out with the weird hair and the weird catch. No.
that was all Chris. we just had our wheels a turning, you know what I mean?
Before we bring up the main reason why I wanted to play an audio clip, but going back to the Goldberg thing, because it bothered me, so it bothers me to this day, and I know, let it go, it's gone, obviously, but Goldberg and Jericho was my favorite segment in late 98 on that show, and my fiance and I talk about this a lot too. Those two would head, you know, they would butt heads verbally. Well, Jericho, not really Goldberg verbally, but Jericho would always find a way to sneak his way out of it. And Jericho had this great scheme that you wouldn't let him touch him, and they would eventually have a match, and Goldberg would not have that match. Goldberg would not let them have that match. And I remember when they finally touched, Goldberg speared him in the entranceway, and it was one of those huge Goldberg pops, and it just died. It just ended. It stopped. And I really think that's a match. I know they wrestled later on in WWE a couple times, and they had a feud. But back in the late 90s when Goldberg was on top of his game, I think that would have been amazing to have that happen. Stro, your thoughts on Goldberg and Jericho, then Derek.
Well, we talked earlier, you know, how, you know, tough Goldberg is. I mean, that he's a legit tough guy in itself. And with Jericho, I mean, you got a world traveler. I mean, you guys wrestled in like Mexico and Japan. That was training in the dungeon, you know, Calgary. You know what I mean? The Hearts. you know, I mean, I was with him even before, like with Smoky Mountain Wrestling. He was teaming with Lance Storm as the Thrill Seekers. You know, and I mean, he was. I mean, even before he came to WCW, he was a veteran of many, you know, different wrestling styles. So I mean, a match with him and Goldberg at the time would have been money, and something I would have looked forward to.
Derek.
Yeah. Those segments were awesome. I remember he'd like be on Thunder or he'd be on Nitro, and they'd say Goldberg's not in the building, and he'd challenge Goldberg to a match and count him out, and he'd have Rousers walking around with the he'd have Rousers with the Jericho 2 Goldberg 0 signs. And I read his book, and even in his book he goes, you know, we would have had the match. The match wouldn't have been competitive at all. He just would have squashed me, and it would have been awesome. And he was right, because I think people were willing to pay money to see Goldberg shut him up. And I don't know if because Goldberg thought he was too big of a deal to deal with Chris Jericho, but just him beating Chris Jericho up for 2-3 minutes would have been amazing TV. And I think they could have made a lot of money with him.
Oh, my God. Jericho set that up. Jericho set that up so beautifully. Then, show you can say what you're going to say. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to step on you.
Oh, I heard there was an idea going around about them having like him and Ralphus having a match in a mattress, you know, with Norman Smiley being involved somehow. It sounded kind of crazy.
Ralphus, once in a while we need you, Ralphus. But Jericho set that up so beautifully. Jericho set it up masterfully, and it just teetered out. Like, I could count 10 or 20 angles that died on Nitro without an answer alone, let alone other TV shows and other things they did. Okay, enough about Goldberg. We're going to stick on Jericho for a minute, because one of my favorite feuds on Nitro of all time, it was featured on Nitro, was, well, I'm just going to play this for you guys, and then we'll talk about it. Derek, you touched upon this. We're just going to play this real quick, and then we'll talk about it.
He's not happy at all. He'll do anything. You know what? dedicate this match to the memory of Dean Malenko. You know, Dean, you let a lot of people down, a lot of people, including myself, down when you quit and went home after losing your match to me. You know, you aren't the first person to submit to the awesome power of the Lion Tamer, and you won't be the last, but you're the first that took your ball and went home.
Immediately, as Jericho applied the Lion Tamer. Now what has he got?
Thank you. Thank you very much. You know, since I took care of Mr. Jannetty so quickly, I came prepared.
So, the man of 1,004 holds, one of the funniest segments I've ever seen on a Nitro broadcast, and that was playing the whole time, so you're one of my favorite feuds, obviously, you get by the clues on that one, was Malenko and Jericho. And again, we talked about Jericho setting up Goldberg, but Jericho and Malenko, Jericho set up Malenko for that glorious comeback, which we'll touch upon in a second, so well. I mean, you just hated this dude, and he just was just eating at Malenko week after week. And I think that was one of my, when I think of Nitro, one of the things I think of is Malenko and Jericho. Those guys were gold. Strode, you first, and then you, Derek.
Oh yeah, what a great feud that that was. I mean, you know, Jericho was definitely the charismatic portion of that one, and you had Dean Malenko, who was just a wrestling machine. And I remember one time I'm talking to Dean Malenko in the back, you know what I mean, and just shooting it here and there, and then here comes Jericho, comes up in a kimono outfit, the Japanese blue kimono, and looks and says, "I'm going to get you, Dean." Right? Dean had to walk away. Dean had to walk away to keep him laughing. And Dean, I never, you know, you all ever see Dean like smirk or laugh, but I mean, Jericho was hysterical.
Yeah, I remember he had the gimmick where he was like, he had Prince Iaukea's little lay thingy, and he had he had Juventud Guerrera's mask around his neck. And he would come out and say things to Dean Malenko. He'd say things to Dean Malenko like, you know, your brother looks like the milkman, and you know, because your dad was always on the road. Like, he would say all these crazy things to Dean Malenko.
He was digging at his father, Derek. He was digging at his dead dad. It was, oh man, beautiful.
It was awesome, and I remember, I think it was Super Brawl, they had, like, the tournament, and Dean was dressed as Seiko Play, I think his name was, and he rips off the mask, and the crowd erupts, and goes crazy, you know. It was great stuff. It was some of the best stuff on the show at the time.
Well, it was Slambury 98, and the only reason why I remember it that succinctly is I mentioned earlier the videotape collection I had. That was the first pay-per-view of 98 that I recorded, that I ordered, and I had every single one to the end of the company. Past that, Slambury, not only did he I love that he did the ring introductions for all the cruiserweights coming out for the Battle Royal. That was beautiful. The Lou Ferrigno lookalike contest, and he wants his Lover Boy tape back from Lenny Lane. That stuff, just gold. When Malenko pulled that mask off, I'm hard pressed for anybody to find a pop. That was one, again, you talk about the word pop, and pop is a word used in the business for crowd reaction. For those who don't know, think I'm crazy. One of the loudest of the year, if not the loudest. That was huge, and I'll never forget that. What a way to build Malenko back up, and then those guys feuded for two more months. I mean, you had the segment on Capitol Hill and at the Library of Congress with Jericho and the conspiracy theory, that, you know, they weren't going to let him do anything. He's like, just give me a camera. I think it's in his book. Just give me a camera, I'll film something. And it was one of the best segments filmed for Nitro, period. Derek, your thoughts on your ending thoughts on Malenko and Jericho, and then, of course, you, Stro.
I remember, like you said, I remember him going to Congress, and he's walking around, and he's talking to the crazy lady on the streets, and she's just rambling about nonsensical stuff, and he's calling J.J. Dillon JoJo Dillon and all these crazy things. Like, he would come out every week, and he'd just have me cracking up. And Ralph was standing there with the too small shirt. I remember there was a time where he was walking to the ring like Goldberg, and I think they were, like, in South Carolina somewhere. And he's like, "Hello, Kentucky," while he's running, and he's walking through the wrong doors, and he couldn't get to the ring, and he's getting lost in the backstage area. Like, everything he did, the last year or two he was in WCW, everything he did was gold.
I want to say that was in Washington, wasn't it?
I'm sorry. Yeah.
I said the wrong thing. I think that was the segment you're talking about where he was doing why am I blanking on the name of the movie? Holy moly. English comedy rock band. Spinal Tap. He was doing the Spinal Tap. Yeah, I think that was Fall Brawl. That's what sticks out of my head. But, Stro, your thoughts on the conspiracy theory angle?
Oh, that was gold. Gold. I mean, from the promo segments they did to the matches. I mean, it was great. And I mean, the whole feud was just definitely one of the high moments of Nitro.
I think if a segment or a feud, rather, pardon me, would have ever proven, I think we should push this guy towards the top, it would have been that one. And Jericho took anything and made it gold. A lot of guys in that company did made it gold, but he made that beautiful. And even towards the end, as you said, Derek, his WCW run, the feud with Perry Saturn that he had, where he made Perry Saturn wear the dress. And then he jobbed to him. He kept, you know, Perry Saturn kicked his ass for like 2 months after that. And Jericho, the Goldberg thing. And I remember where, if somebody remembers this, please speak up. Jericho had finally lost the Cruiserweight title the second time after the whole conspiracy theory angle where he kept the title. He lost it, and that next week, Stevie Ray, he stole the TV championship from Booker T because Booker T was out with an injury, so he was defending his television title. And for some reason, Jericho came out and challenged him for it, and then my head exploded when I thought about it. Big Show, the Giant at the time, came out, chokeslammed Stevie Ray. Jericho won. What the hell did that happen for?
I remember that. I remember him winning the TV. Yeah, and it just, you know, it seems like he would switch between the secondary titles, either he was Cruiserweight champion or he was tag champion, or TV champion. They would never, like, let him push him to the next level. And it's funny because I think we talked about this last week. He had a tag team with Eddie Guerrero, and they were pretty entertaining together, and they'd throw him together for 2 weeks, and then they would disappear, and then they'd throw him together for 2 more weeks, and you wouldn't see anything else. It seems like every time he got something going, somebody would put the stops, the brakes to it, and he'd be stuck in that level, you know, the mid-card level.
I'm telling you, Stro, before you go, I'm telling you, I can't emphasize how great that house show match was with him versus Malenko and Benoit in the Horseman. It was amazing. And I know there's always footage of house shows that pop up on YouTube. Like, they had the L.A. show, some dude, the same guy that went to the Saturday Night Show also went to the Melee in L.A. show, which was a house show they did on a Tuesday in L.A. before pay-per-view that had the Nitro ring and everything. Yes, that is stuff I remember. Malice at the Palace was another one, at the Cow Palace. I believe it was the Cow Palace. But I really wish footage of that existed. It was unbelievable, those two together. I mean, you know, you can't say enough about Benoit even, but Eddie Guerrero, just unbelievable. Stro, your final thoughts on Chris Jericho on Nitro?
Oh, yeah. Jericho is definitely one of the standout stars on Nitro, hands down. I mean, everything he touched was gold, and which is a sign of a great wrestler, the fact that you can get, no matter who in your ring with each and every night, you can make a classic or an epic match with, or an entertainment segment. And then Jericho was the epitome of that, and definitely will be one of the all-time best.
Yep. JoJo, I was just remembering, Derek, the JoJo Dillon thing. That made me chuckle. remember, even though they had Goldberg on, there's two things I remember. They had Goldberg on Raw, but remember when they were actually, it was another Nitro segment, back to the Goldberg-Jericho thing and how great that was at the time. He came out and fought Goldberg, but it was that fake little guy. And the next...
Yes.
And he came out and the other thing I remember during the Jericho-Goldberg feud was Jericho coming out at Fall Brawl. He was going to use Goldberg's pyro, and it didn't fire. And he just had a temper tantrum in the middle of it. Oh, man. I can't say enough, I'm so glad this has happened, because there's so many guys that we can talk about that were featured, that were carrying Nitro, and I mean that in a good way. I'm not saying, oh, the show's not going to carry it. I mean, there's so many guys that were segments on Nitro and carried the show that we have to talk about. I remember, briefly, we'll touch upon this next week, Scott Hall in late 98, early 99, still the alcohol, he was still kind of having drinking problems, but they kind of, it looked like they were camouflaging it a bit better on TV, was working ladder matches on Nitro and hardcore matches with Bigelow and Goldberg in the middle of that feud. And it was some of the best matches. Stro, you first.
Oh yeah. You know, Scott Hall was, I mean, he had a great mind. He still has a great mind for this business. And, I mean, despite his problems at the time, I mean, he was like the mastermind behind all the NWO cliches and catchphrases and all that. I mean, that was all him. He was the guy behind all that. And, with him, you know, being with the NWO, he was pretty much the forefront guy as far as, you know, coming with all the creative stuff.
Derek?
I always had a soft spot for Scott Hall when he was raising. I mean, going back when he was the Diamond Stud. But when towards the end of late 98, 99, when they kind of, you know, they screwed Goldberg and they put the Wolfpack and the Black and White together, I remember for some reason, maybe it was me being a teenager and being immature, I always found it funny when he would come out and he had the taser and he'd just be, you know, he'd just be letting the taser off for no reason in the middle of in-ring promos and crazy things like that. And one of my favorite Scott Hall moments was, I believe, Ric Flair was in, like, the crazy house. And he's in the crazy house and he's dancing around in his robe. And for absolutely no reason, Scott Hall's just sitting there. Yeah, he's sitting in the crazy house, just sitting there relaxing. And it's like, what are you doing here?
Yeah, he does the figure thing like he's real scared, and then he throws the toothpick at Flair, yeah. And then it's gone. For no reason, it was over. Guys, I hate to do the Tony Schiavone, but we're out of time, so we're going to have to continue this next week, so keep your tape machines rolling. Real quick, Derek, promote anything. Plug away, my friend.
Same as every week, in the room. Myself, Brady, and Ray. We have other co-hosts, but they usually don't show up. But we're on VOC Nation.
No comment.
VOCNation.com, 9:30. I don't think we have a guest this week. I usually don't find these things out to the day of the show, which is great planning by Brady. But funny show. I think we're going to talk the release of some of the guys who got released last week, Oksana and all those guys. We'll probably be talking about that this Tuesday. So check us out, 9:30 on VOCNation.com.
Stro, this week in the life of Stro, where are you going to be and where can we find you?
I know next week I'm going to be shooting a trailer for one of my upcoming films called Dracula's War, and also be partaking in Scares That Cares Fan Fest convention in Williamsburg, Virginia, for that weekend. And the following week, the week of July 4th and 5th, July 4th, I'll be wrestling for the UPWA. I'll be appearing at the Southport Beach Bash in Southport, North Carolina, and wrestling July 5th at the National Guard Armory in Wilmington, North Carolina, also for UPWA. And for more information about what's going on with me, what's happening, films, wrestling, speaking, what have you, just go to my official website at www.thestro.com, and you can find it just putting Stro, STRO, in the Google search.
Anything you need to know about me, my friends, HICTalkRadio.com. We are off this coming week. Obey the Puck won't be back till July 21st, and we're going to take the week off because we all have plans that have to do beyond the world of wrestling and MMA. But we have a huge archive of all of our episodes. HICTalkRadio.com, Facebook.com/HICTalkRadio, or just follow us on Twitter at HICTalkRadio, and follow me at DanLaw83 on Twitter. Don't follow me on Facebook. Follow me on Twitter. Or follow me on Facebook if you can find me. It's not that hard. I think we got a couple, we're going to milk a couple weeks out of Nitro and the TV shows in general and switch into Thunder. But next week will be part two of Thunder. Again, our favorite talent. If we don't get to it either next week or part three, we'll be talking about the Russo-Ferrara era and much more. So next we Nitro Part 2. I'm going to leave you gentlemen with audio for that we just talked about tonight. Everybody, VOCNation.com. We'll see you next.
All systems operating within normal design parameters. Engage cybernetic generation sequence. Malfunction detected. System overload. Warning.